You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. Yes, you're very welcome along to another edition of Talking Rugby with Dave O'Grady. The show, of course, sponsored by speartackle.co.za, the site that tackles rugby head on. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Alan, who's in Limerick. Alan, you're very welcome again.
Thanks very much.
Peter, who's all the way across the sea in Toronto, Canada. And what you said about Canada the last time, I hope you're still doing well. I hope a few people haven't tracked you down after that, Peter.
God, I don't recall saying anything bad about Canada, but yeah, I'm still alive anyway.
Good man. And we're delighted to be joined by a boards.ie member, Brian, who's in Ballina. I wouldn't say a Mayo man because he's all the way from Cashel in Tipperary, but you're residing in Ballina at the minute. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks, Dave.
No problem.
For the time being, anyway.
Ah, good man. It's great to hear a Cashel voice on the show. Now, lads, let's get started. What a chance Ireland have now. A terrific result over Italy. I think it brought emotion to many well-known pundits' eyes, and it was great to see. It's probably the biggest chance Ireland have for the greatest finish at the World Cup yet. On that note, I guess we'll really start our show. And Peter, if I want to bring you in first, Ireland v Italy, I know it was a tight first half, 9-6 going in at half-time, but it really was what you predicted. And as you said in the last podcast of Talking Rugby, Ireland would have it in the second half. But did you imagine it would be so much?
No. I knew Ireland would finish out and win it in the end. But I think the performance by Ireland really was, it was something sensational. With the way Ireland just, they dominated every facet of the game. And especially when they dominated the scrum, which really put Italy on the back foot.
We all agreed there, Peter, that Italy had the strongest scrum at the World Cup, so it was very positive to see that from Ireland.
Yeah, it was extremely, especially with the fact, I know that Italy will be mourned the fact that Castro Giovanni went off early enough in the game, but even up to that point, Ireland were you know, at parity with Italy in the scrum, so I don't think Castro Giovanni going off and changed the game much. It did change the game, but it didn't change it to the point where Italy could say, oh, we lost because he went off. I think also with the game, I was happy with how Murray performed. I thought personally it was a massive gamble choosing Murray, because it really could have backfired. But despite the fact, I think he was a bit slow to the breakdown, but I think Murray really played a very good game. Once again, Healy, Ross and Best, you know, they deserve all the plaudits for this game. Best has really, the line-out has performed massively. He'll be a massive loss, and Ross and Healy, scrummaging wise, they were very good.
Yeah, Alan, would you go along with that? I mean, we were talking about Best, and there's a chance we probably might have lost Best for the next game, but I mean, it just goes to show that the scrummaging was very strong, and it's probably fair to say that our backs were probably, we had the best display from them we've probably ever seen in the World Cup.
Absolutely, the revival of our back play was the biggest positive of the game for me, and I actually thought as well that the Italians tried to play some rugby. You know, they did throw the ball around a bit, but it was hopeless, and just the difference between the two sides in terms of the backs, where the Italians were just throwing it side to side and nothing was really happening, but when Ireland had the chances, they were cutting lines. I mean, you saw Tommy Bowe for the first try and just, you know, sensing the gap and going through it, and then O'Driscoll, you know, with the running off his shoulder and perfect line to score the try. So Italy, their big problem is that they just don't have the quality out wide to trouble a decent side. The scrum really is the only weapon they have, and if they don't have chances to kick a lot of goals, they just can't score tries. They're just not good enough. So
Alan, you probably think that Tommy Bowe will feel hard done by with the disallowed tries and probably a penalty try that really should have been. He's been quite unlucky in this World Cup, as amazing as he's played.
Yeah, the first try certainly was a try, the O'Brien offload that was called forward, and I think it's a case of we need to look at the role of the TMO again.
Mm.
I mean, if that happened in rugby league, the TMO would have the authority to go back a phase or go back into, you know, rule on a judgment call in the field rather than just in the 22 or on the touchline. So you can't really blame Kaplan too much there because he didn't have a clear view and he has to make a split second call. And I suppose if you're to the back of the play looking at it, you might think, yeah, it's forward and he has to make a call. So you can't be too harsh there. On the second try, I don't know. I don't think there was much in the contact. I actually think Bo was diving before Benvenuti came in. So it was a marginal call for me. A lot of people on boards were saying, you know, that's a Stonewall penalty try. I personally wouldn't say that.
But, I mean, I think the point is, Alan, that the fact that he had done so much, I think he kicked it past three players and, you know, there was contact there and, you know, the decision could have gone either way.
Oh, it could have. And, he did deserve to get on the score sheet because, yeah, he had a fantastic game. He produced a performance that I think we're all waiting for because he had a quiet enough game against Australia, barred the intercept. And USA, he was poor enough as well. So it's great to see him back in form and firing.
Yeah. Brian, did you think it was a try when you first seen it?
On first viewing, are we talking about the first try here?
The what should have been a penalty try by Tommy Bowe at the very end of the game.
I didn't think it was a penalty try because even if Bowe was held back, when he was diving over the line, there's no guarantee that he would have, you know, that he would have got to the wall and, you know, managed to touch it down. But I think it was definitely a penalty anyway, and I really don't know how the TMO
to Kaplan that there was no foul play because clearly you can see that he's dragging him back without the ball as he's going over the line, regardless of where the ball was diving before he grabbed onto him.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. I mean, Tommy Bowe will be looking for to get a fairly fair try. What about Brian, Italian manager Mallet's comments? I mean, we've seen, I think what was said before the game and the run up to the game, he started playing mind games with the Irish in the sense that, you know, the Italian scrum is going to demolish Ireland and all that. And we've seen from the Irish forwards in the scrum, the smiles on their faces and everything when they had won the first few rounds. And I think the Irish really put it up to them and perhaps a lot was down to those comments.
I think rather more than Mallet trying to play mind games with the Irish, I think it was more kind of a concerted effort to sway the referee towards thinking that Italy have the better scrum. But I think it kind of came back to, you know, bite him in the arse in a sense, because when he clearly just got Healy and Ross and Best riled up, they did have a better scrum than the Italians. I think Mallet was a bit, you know, cocky to say it because, well, you know, Italy always have been, you know, quite for their strength up front. I mean, they've never really demolished the Irish scrum. Even, you know, the last 2 or 3 years from the Irish scrum.
Yeah,
as
to when John Hayes is in Tahiti. I think they've never, you know, really, you know, gone to town on the scrum. It's probably a bit unwise looking back at it now and, you know, they're probably thinking to himself that, you know, he should have tried to target Ireland in different areas, but no, I don't think the game was ever in doubt. And I was pretty confident going into it that we would rack up about 20 points in the last 60 minutes.
I think that's probably fair to say. And Alan, if I just go back to the point you make, I mean, I think Ireland, it's something that we didn't really have in the warm-ups. They've really been clinical in the finish of the games, towards the end of the games. Perhaps, you know, in the past few months, Ireland would have let Italy back into that game, but really, it was almost like the coaching was spot on in that, Alan.
Yeah, it's a case of when you get the opportunities, you have to score, and I think Ireland had maybe six or seven opportunities, and we took three of them, and of course, two of them were marginal. So I think, you know, when we were in control of the game, the first 20 minutes of the second half, and we scored, I think, 17 unanswered points, which was just ruthless. I mean, Ireland ended Italy's chances then and there, and this, I think, it's an indication of what we need to be able to do to go further in the tournament, because this is a type of, I suppose, clinical mode that we need to be able to switch on when needed, because against the likes of Wales, or if we make it to the final against the All Blacks, we might have 10 minutes of dominance against the All Blacks, and they'll be the times where we'll have to score.
That's a bit, Peter, you know, Alan's there mentioning making it to the final against the All Blacks, and the way I guess the group has panned out, you know, Southern Hemisphere against Southern Hemisphere and Northern Hemisphere against Northern Hemisphere, and that's not what the rugby boards were thinking about. They were probably, you know, it was probably set up that Australia would win our group and they'd play against Northern Hemisphere and we'd play Southern Hemisphere, but that's not the way. We're against Wales and it's going to be a really cracking game. Wales defeating Fiji 66-0. Are we worried going into this game, Peter?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's I'm worried. Of course, you're worried playing against Wales, but Wales are the kind of team that I suppose, and the Welsh will be feeling the same. We would be confident that we can beat them, but then again, the vice versa, Wales would feel the same. I mean, here we have probably the two form Northern Hemisphere teams actually meeting in the quarterfinal. Only for Wales were very unlucky not to beat South Africa, and they would have come top of the group. So, both Ireland and Wales are they're very similar in that they're both very strong units from 1 to 15. I suppose where Wales' major strength is over us, in my opinion, is their quality on the wing. I think Williams and North are far more dangerous finishers than Bowen Earls. And I can understand, I can see there's
really?
A debate.
Do you really think that, Peter? Are they really better than Bo and Earls? Considering, you know, Bo plays for Ospreys and he's probably the best player on their team. I mean, is that not a bit optimistic on the Welsh side of things?
No, I think purely for wingers finishing, whereas like Bo is big and strong, and Bo to me is more like a centre playing on the wing. Earls for me defensively is where he's weak, and he's up against North, which he's absolutely sensational. You know, we all thought Sonny Bill Williams would be the big man the big new shining hope that came out of this World Cup, but it has been North. I think on boards there's been a lot of debate with regards to Trimble and should Trimble actually come on for his defensive abilities, because if Wales get a lot of ball, they're going to look to definitely get a mismatch with North running against Earls, and it's hard to see Earls coming out the better of that battle.
Yeah, I don't know, Brian, what do you think about that? Peter's obviously been a little bit downhearted about the Irish backs. To me personally, I thought the Irish backs have been absolutely terrific, and I guess the forwards, if you look at the Irish pack, I mean, we've never seen Ferris perform as well in a green shirt, along with the likes. We have Sean O'Brien, who was man of the match against Italy, and we have a pretty good pack, and I guess would you agree, Brian, that the scrum, and what do you think? Actually, go back to Peter's point. Do you think the backs are better than our backs?
No, I think that's a bit unfair on Earls. I mean, the guy, he scored 4 tries in 2 games, and, you know, he just displayed some great finishing, and I think especially on boards, Earls seems to get a lot of criticism for his defensive play.
Yeah.
Apart from maybe one dodgy miss against England on Tuilagi, who was an absolute beast at ball hand, and Earls is playing out of position in that game as well. I think, you know, people see one miss back and they assume he's a bad backer. I mean, Ernst does a lot of really good work in defence, and George York, for all his potential and skill, I mean, he was run riot against Fiji, but it was a Fiji side that really didn't move up to up to scratch at all. I mean, they knew they were going home. They obviously caved in after the first 2 or 3 tries. So I think, you know, he's a young guy, lots of potential, but I think we're selling Ernst and Bo a bit short here, and they're both fantastic and efficient and both lined with them.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Peter, I want to go back to you on that. I mean, obviously, you know, Brian sounds like he's inside a washing machine at the time, but, you know, he made a point about Earls, you know. He says you're being a little bit critical on Earls, and, you know, he's probably not as bad as you're making out, and he has got defensive qualities, and, you know, he mentioned actually Trimble, Peter, coming on, and from what we've seen of Trimble has been saying in the press all week that he really wants a shot at this Ireland team and he wants to be able to show what he can do. He has done quite well since he's come on.
Yeah, no, just to go back, I think I'm being made out to be really critical of Earls and saying that our backs are terrible. I'm sounding like George Hook here. But no, Earls is he's a class finisher. And as we've seen in this World Cup, he is purely a wing. He's a finisher. I suppose for me, I'm just thinking of the opinion that he's coming up against a player of North of such size. And he seems to be, he's completely deadly. And I'm just sort of coming from the point of view that maybe we could actually, at the start Trimble and then look to bring Earls on later on in the game, out on the wing when Ireland have got some dominance and hopefully our back row has pushed them back and we can actually start on Nation Earls. But I think at the start, in my opinion, I think justifiably Trimble has a good shot at actually playing on the wing.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Alan? Drop Earls? I mean, is that not a bit bizarre at this stage? He's had a very good World Cup. Why would you take a risk like that and drop in a very good player for Ireland?
Well, I feel sorry for Trimble because he's definitely the best player in the squad that isn't starting. But with my Munster hat on, I mean, you can't drop Earls. He's just got that spark that a lot of players don't have. I would just have him on the pitch. But
even if you took your Munster hat off, Alan, you'd probably still say the same. You couldn't drop Earls. I mean, any Irish fan would say the same. I mean, a lot of Ulster fans are obviously arguing for Trimble to be in there because Trimble has been very effective in the last few games. But I mean, Earls hasn't put a foot wrong, and he's been so dangerous at the same time.
He has, and I think he's been treated appallingly by Kidney. Just to put him in the centre it's just crazy. You know, you got to keep him in one position, and I feel sorry for him because he's been moved around by Munster and by Ireland, and he just needs to be set. He seems to be settled in one position now, and I think he's just a better option than Trimble. That sounds harsh on Trimble. Trimble's a great player, and if Trimble started ahead of Earls, I'd have no problem, but just Earls for me.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and of course leading up to the World Cup it was looking like Trimble was going to get the nod ahead of Earls, particularly in the warm-up games. He was one of the unlikely shining Irish players. What about the other row we had last week on the show, the O'Gara v Sexton? Peter, you know, it has been a tough decision, and after that Italy game both players have seemed to done really well.
Yeah, it's it really is a tough decision, and it's one that I'd rather Kidney take than me, because every day that I think about it, every minute my mind changes on who I'd select. Sexton seems to have got his kicking back in order, which was the reason that we all felt he should be dropped anyway. I think last week we touched upon it was a case of horses for courses. I think my view on it against Wales is I probably would start looking at maybe playing Sexton. This is another controversial one that the two boys mightn't agree with either. So I'm starting to alienate myself already. But I think Wales, they're a very different proposition to Italy. For me, against Wales, it's all about stopping them in the first up tackles and just suffocating them so that they can't get their offloading game going. I think If we play O'Gara, they're going to look to, especially with the 9, 12 and 13 they have, you know, players like Roberts and Phillips and Warburton and those, they're just going to run at O'Gara at every opportunity.
Yeah, they seem to, a lot of the Six Nations sides do seem to target O'Gara, and you always see, particularly like the likes of Wales and Scotland, seem to really try to ruffle up O'Gara.
Yeah, no, they do, and O'Gara, his defense is, it's not as bad as everyone says. He tries, but nowhere near as good as Sexton's, I think, and that's probably why I would look to start Johnny. I think O'Gara would be brilliant to come on with 20 minutes to go, and because he's had the chance to look at the game to assess what needs to be done. Against Wales, we're not going to play a kicking game because you're not going to kick it to those backs if you make any bad kicks. And O'Gara, his kicking out of hand wasn't great against Italy, but if you kick any bad
ticks down the field to the likes of North or Williams and those guys, they're just going to punish you. So for me, it's ball in hand, physicality, not letting them get any line breaks, and I'd look to start Johnny.
Yeah, how about that, Alan? You know, Peter saying that O'Gara is a little bit on the weenie side, that gets roughed about, that gets like a kid in the playground playing with sixth class when he's only in junior infants. He says, bring O'Gara on maybe as an impact sub more and start Sexton. You'd go for O'Gara to start.
Yeah, because I just think playing a helter-skelter game will suit Wales, and I think we got to use O'Gara's ability to just kick it into the corners and, you know, keep the Welsh in their own half, because there's no one better at that role. So for me, yeah, O'Gara to start. It was great to see Sexton come on and kick his goals, because should O'Gara have a shocker or he gets injured, we need Sexton to come on and do the business. So I'd be very confident if Sexton did start, but I think O'Gara should start, and I think O'Gara will start. From Kidney's perspective, it would be very hard to drop O'Gara after his performance against Italy.
Yeah. What about yourself, Brian, joining us on Talking Rugby with SpearTackle.co.za for the first time from inside a washing machine, but at the same time, you are a Munster man. I'm going to guess that you're going to suggest O'Gara should start in this game.
Well, actually, if you'd have asked me 2 or 3 weeks ago who I thought was Ireland's 10, I would have said Sexton, because I didn't think O'Gara had the running game to get the Irish backs moving, but I think he has to go to O'Gara again. I'm not going to try and second-guess Kidney, because he could start Sexton. But, I mean, since Sexton's come on the scene, I think O'Gara he's standing up closer to the game line. In a kind of a more, I think Sexton's put a bit of pressure on him, and O'Gara's putting his body on the line more. He does have some defensive frailties, but I think, given the level of his performance against Italy, and to a lesser extent against Russia, I think he has to go with O'Gara. There's no real choice in it. O'Gara's kicking his goals. Sexton kicked too well at the end against Italy, but, you know, no pressure situation. So, you know, he's got to go with O'Gara, and if it's not working, he's got Sexton on the bench.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Thanks for that, Brian. As you sound on a horse riding into the wind. I want to move on to the other quarterfinals, lads. The England v France clash. Peter, if I want to come to you first, it's a tough one to call considering both teams have had a bit of disarray in their camp. You know, you've had the usual French at an international event having disarray. We don't know what the manager is smoking from time to time. The English media seem to be battering this English team. What do you think? This got to be a tough one to call, this quarterfinal.
It's at the moment, it's like just it's a toss of a coin to see who's going to show up here. I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, France are in complete turmoil at the moment. I mean, Levermont came out in public. He criticised these players, and he started talking about divisions in the team players, you know, player groups and all that. So it just, he even made reference to the soccer World Cup and all that. So
yeah.
France look like they're in complete disarray. England at the moment, you know, they're unbeaten, but they could actually have lost to both Argentina and Scotland. So, in reality, I don't think England are playing that well. They're not playing with any rhythm or cohesion. I do think, however, England always seem to have the upper hand when it comes to matches between France, because despite all the off-field problems, the English players from 1 to 15, they will give it all for their jersey, even if they're not playing well or even if they're not playing with any sort of a game plan, they'll still turn up and give it all. So I think that they'll beat a French team who quite easily could lie down after 20 or 30 minutes if it does turn into a big dogfight.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Alan. That has to be said. You know, this English team, we see them in previous World Cups, you know, struggling through the group stages, but sneaking their way somehow to a semi-final, and then, boom, they turn it on. They've got the pride in the jersey, and that's a lot of credit has to go to England. Do you think that'll happen this time?
Yeah, it's very strange, isn't it? Every World Cup, it just seems that the best four sides on paper just don't make it all to the semi-finals. And to be honest, this game rubber stamps that tradition, doesn't it? Because both sides are not where they should be, are, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the England stories in the media, I mean, they're just becoming farcical at this stage. I mean, it's got to be distracting for the rest of the squad as a whole that players with a wonderful reputation like Wilkinson, consummate professionals, I mean, they must be getting sick of the few Muppets in the team who think they're rock stars and are going out and causing trouble and just causing, you know, causing problems for the management and for the rest of the squad.
Is that not, Alan, is that not a media thing, though, with England? Because we see it with the English soccer team as well. I mean, they're always under the limelight. Players are no longer players. They're celebrities. And that's what people are writing about and tweeting about and everything. You know, there's always, if there's a story there, the press will get it. Whereas the same things could be happening with other teams. It's just the media on England are always going to be 10 times worse than every other country.
Oh, that goes without saying. But, like, if you're going to get in trouble, for example, the nightclub thing, right?
Yeah.
You would have thought that after that, they would have made sure not to get in trouble again. I mean, we've heard the whole allegations by that woman and what happened, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that just should not happen. I mean, it's a joke. And Johnson must be tearing his hair out at these guys. But, I'd fancy, you know, that something like that is going to happen again before they get knocked out. It's just ridiculous. And it's distracting from actually how bad England are playing. They're, you know, it's papering over the cracks.
Yeah.
And, but at the same time, if you look at France, I mean, they're just a disaster. And I actually think that the French senior players need to do what England did in 07 and just kick out the coach, you know, make the coach irrelevant. Because as you said, England in 07, they were a disaster in the pool stages. And then the senior players, the likes of Delalio, just said to Ashton, look, mate, you're out and we're going to run the team. And they got to the final. And France need to do the same thing. I mean, it's become a disgrace, isn't it? I mean, it's Raymond Domenech all over again. It's just, I mean, it's hilarious how this is happening. This thing is happening again with a French team. I mean, their performance against Tonga was just incredible. I mean, only Haran Ardicky and Maidar looked half interested in fighting for the jersey, and the rest of them just, you know, couldn't be arsed.
Yeah.
Incredible stuff.
Yeah, we've had a good few comments on the show and onto the world's talking that, Alan, you always, when talking about France, try to start a revolution with this French team. But Brian, if I want to ask you, Brian, about England and just going back on the point that Alan was making about Martin Johnson, and, you know, it's got to be, no doubt, Brian, hard for Johnson, considering, you know, he's an old style, no doubt he's an old style type of coach and he likes things, you know, done the way they used to be. He's not really up for this kind of stuff that, you know, reporting in the media and, you know, this thing about, you know, players' hidden secrets and all. That's got to be a real doozy for him.
Yeah, well, I can see where, you know, I think the way he reacted to it didn't do the team any good. I mean, he came out and said, well, there's nothing wrong with it. They're allowed to go out and have a few beers. But, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the team going out having a few beers, but, you know, tossing midgets and shifting young ones and just kind of, you know, taking the piss when you go driving home.
Oh, yeah.
They could do it Cam and Down, maybe. Like, you can see the Irish team go out. They have a few beers. They don't go over the top. There's no stories written about them. It's a really tough one to call this quarter final.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to come down to if France turn up on the day. If France can put their pool stage behind them, I don't think they'll have any problem beating an average English side.
I mean, Janie, as you mentioned, I was waiting for actually to hear on Talking Rugby, shifting young ones. I was waiting for a typical Irish saying like that. Lads, I want to move on to the whole Argentina v New Zealand clash because that's an interesting one. New Zealand, Peter, have kind of cruised through their group and they've looked really, really good in places. Argentina might count themselves a little bit unlucky, but they got through it in the end, and this could be a better game than we thought.
To be honest, I'm not really expecting any fireworks in this game. New Zealand, yeah, they cruised through their group, and they would have looked to have a test. But this is a New Zealand team. They're minus Dan Carter. And if you read all the press, it actually looks like the New Zealand public are in a state of mourning.
All I see is I see a picture of Dan Carter coming off the New Zealand bus with crutches. And, you know, we know what the New Zealand media are like. You know, if Dan Carter's not playing, then, oh, it's all chaos in the team. This got to be really a bad thing for the All Blacks.
Well, it is, but I suppose also you could look at the positive that it actually takes away the pressure if they had Carter playing. Like, Carter is a massive loss. There's no denying the fact he's a massive loss. But it takes away a lot of the pressure from the public, because a lot of people in New Zealand, they've looked and they now think, well, we're minus Carter, so there's every chance that we're not going to win this. Like, so it takes an awful lot of pressure, and perhaps New Zealand will go out now and actually win the tournament. You know, do as they're well capable of winning it without Carter.
Do as they've not done before, though, Peter, in fairness.
Well, they have won it before. But
yeah, I know, but, you know, not in such a long time since this whole, you know, media thing in New Zealand has gotten on them. They've more pressure on them now than they've ever had in any World Cup before.
Oh, they have, but I think... Carter, hello?
Yeah.
Was someone shot there?
It sounded like, I think it was a pen dropping on the ground, but it certainly wasn't Carter's leg breaking. Anyway, go for it, Carter.
I thought it was a drive-by.
A drive-by. JD, you said there'd be bookies on your door last week, Peter, which are bad predictions.
Brian's washing machine is conking out, clearly.
I suppose, lads, back on topic anyway. Yeah, I think New Zealand will, they'll beat Argentina even without Carter. Argentina at the weekend, I thought they were pretty poor against Georgia. They looked very tired, and they looked very much like a battered team. They had a tough physical group, and they play a tough physical style. So I can't actually see them being able to stand up to New Zealand. And I think New Zealand, it'll be a bit like the Ireland-Italy game. It'll be tight for maybe the first 30 minutes or so, and then New Zealand will run out easy winners in the end.
Yeah, what do you think, Brian? Do you think Argentina have any chance in this clash?
No, not really. To be honest, I think the game as a contest will be over by the 50th minute. But I think the most important thing for the quarterfinals, in terms of a New Zealand point of view, is trying to establish how Colin Slade will go at 10, or whoever Graham Henry starts, whether it be Weepu. But I think he'll go with Slade, and this will be his chance. And if he doesn't take it, he'll have to look elsewhere to Weepu or the guy they brought in. His name escapes me now, but it's Slade's chance. He can either, you know, if he shows up and plays well, he'd get the jersey for the semi, but he was ready after the Canada game, so it's not looking good for him at the moment. They should beat Argentina.
Yeah. Alan, a quick final point on that game for you. Just a point about Kontopomi. Do you think he'll last the 80 minutes? He has got dodgy ribs.
And, he seemed to be okay for the last few games, but you'd wonder how long he'll last against New Zealand, because they'll definitely target him with a few hits, won't they?
Yeah.
And I mean, he's absolutely key to them, but I don't think it really matters. New Zealand will win this by 20, 25 points, even without Carter, even if Slade has a shocker. That, you know, that they should have enough quality. Again, I suppose the issue is, will Sonny Bill start? I mean, he's been very up and down, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Will he be on the wing, or will he be, as we said, the kind of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the kind of impact sub? And it's a nightmare for New Zealand, isn't it? Because it's the one injury that they couldn't afford. I mean, Carter, you saw Henry in the. Graham Henry in the press conference, he just looked broken. He's just thinking, my glory is running away from me very quickly. And suddenly, you know, it's now a much more interesting tournament. But yeah, New Zealand will get through, and they'll face either the Box or the Aussies in the semi final.
And the Box or the Aussies, Peter, coming to you finally, really. That's going to be a classic game. We spoke about them quite a bit when we were covering the Tri Nations tournament, and obviously South Africa had a makeshift team there where Australia really ran riot, but Australia coming out of Ireland's group with a couple of good performances, but then again, they haven't really done the business. You know, they have missed Pocock. How do you see this game going?
Oh, this is a very tight one. It really is, I suppose Australia, this is the one game Australia didn't want to play, especially after the Ireland game where their scrum and physically they got bullied. So I've a full feeling that that's how South Africa are just going to target this game. South Africa are just going to go out and try and bully Australia off the park. Now, whether Australia can weather that and get enough ball to their backs, then that's going to be the deciding factor. I fancy South Africa to beat Australia, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think Australia, I just don't think that physically they'll be able for South Africa, and there won't be much in the game, but it is a case. I think South Africa at the moment are actually looking like a team to have proved us all wrong in previous podcasts, that they do look like a team who are on a march towards the final.
Yeah, I know Mornay will be delighted to hear you say that, because he had been very negative about his own team up to now, but I'd say he'll be one happy bunny come next week, providing South Africa win. It's actually a great quarterfinals. It's Brian, it's fair to say, you know, we've got it didn't work out the way, you know, they would have wanted it, but at least we're going to be guaranteed with a Northern Hemisphere team against a Southern Hemisphere team in the final, I guess, the way it should be. But looking at, I guess, South Africa v Australia, I guess South Africa can really, if they can gain a foothold in the scrum, it'll really benefit them. How do you see this game going?
I think I'd have to agree with Alan there that South Africa are going to go out and try and dominate Australia physically, like in a kind of similar vein to how Ireland did in the group stages. And I think, I mean, it's an Australian camp that, you know, you can't deny their talent, but they've been ravaged by injury. They never had a great scrum to begin with.
But yeah.
South Africa could just edge it. But in saying that, Morne Steyn is a huge loss for South Africa. But given the fact that he's the best goal kicker on the planet, maybe besides Dan Carpenter, he is just as big a loss to South Africa.
Do you think that the actual game could come down to a few drop goals maybe? Because these two teams, they do tend to go for drop goals quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really tight. And I know one thing about South Africa is, I mean, in the other say, in Francois, they have a great kicker as well, but he can be dodgy enough kind of shorter range at times. So it's really going to come down to the wire, and it'll depend a lot on how Craig Cooper plays as well. When he showed in the pool stage against Ireland that he's lacking some big game temperament, and there's a certain type of game that suits him.
Yeah.
I can't see South Africa giving him a platform to unleash the likes of Beale and O'Connor and White, but, you know, it's got to be tight, and it could come down to the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, perhaps the final point to you, Alan, really, perhaps the two teams, as Brian was saying, you know, there's a chance that these two teams, Alan, could shut up shop, and it could be a real kind of scrappy game. But you'd like to see some expansive rugby being played and to this be an open, high-scoring game. But do you think that's going to happen?
Well, what I'm hoping for is that both sides just play their natural game, and we see a very interesting contest between the Springboks' physicality and the Australians' flair. And, you know, it's a very, very, that's a tough game to call. And just, I think South Africa will win. I think that they're being underrated by everyone. And, I think they have a big performance in them. And Australia, I mean, who's going to start in the back line? Who's going to start at centre with all their injuries? They've been forced to rotate players. They had to play Samo on the wing last week. So,
yeah,
I just think South Africa will do it.
Well, it's going to be an interesting one. And Alan, just how do you think the Rugby World Cup is panning out so far? Are you enjoying it? No doubt you're enjoying Ireland.
Yeah, it's panned out well, hasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Nobody expected us to be in the position that we're in now, and I suppose I'm looking ahead, but it's 240 minutes away from a World Cup victory.
Yeah. It's going to be brilliant. Well, listen, Alan in Limerick, thanks a million for joining me. Brian, inside a washing machine, getting dragged away on horses. It's absolutely brilliant to have you for the first time here on Talking Rugby. It's been a terrific. We've had you, you know, the voice has been strong and then it got dragged away. And Peter, all the way in Toronto, you think you were the one in the washing machine with some of the comments you were coming out with tonight. But listen, thanks a million for joining us. And once again, we'll be podcasting on Talking Rugby with speartackle.co.za. Thanks, lads.
Okay, cheers.
You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.